The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Right now, though, we want to continue a little bit the conversation we were just having with Risa Grace Targo of Eurasia Group, and also broaden it out a little bit to speak about the energy markets more broadly. We have Stephen Shork on the line, president of the Shork Group and one of our favourite contributors. Welcome, Stephen.
It's great to be here, Vonnie. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Just to finish up our conversation on Venezuela, we were speaking a few minutes ago with a Eurasia Group analyst who was explaining that it's probably going to be the status quo for some time in Venezuela, even though there's a little bit of, let's say, regional turmoil or local turmoil to do with Chavez, perhaps not appearing, at least for the moment. Does it change in any way the situation between the U.S. and Venezuela in terms of oil imports?
No, and as a matter of fact, it's amazing how fast things can change. If this was 6-7 years ago, this would be much bigger news than it currently is now. And the reason that is that the United States is just that less dependent on the likes of Venezuela to supply its crude oil. So from that standpoint, Venezuela, well, since Chavez came into office in 1999, has made a concerted effort to steer business away from the United States and to China. So he has spent a lot of time, that is a lot of money. He's left a lot of money on the table trying to procure these trade routes to China, which, as you know, is a much further transit route than it is to the United States. So unfortunately for the people of Venezuela, he's left a lot of money on the table. Now, perhaps this is an investment. Perhaps this will come back to pay dividends long into the future. That does remain to be seen. But the United States, from an import standpoint with Venezuela, is in much better negotiating stance than it was just a few years ago.
Amazing. What about the other places that we import oil from, Stephen? Have there been any dynamics changes that perhaps we haven't highlighted enough?
Well, right now, it's amazing that, for instance, the United States no longer imports light sweet crude oil into the refinery epicenter in the Gulf Coast of the United States. That is because we have so much of this stuff stuck up in the middle of the United States. So we have a glut of oil. So we're actually now changing the dynamics where we are no longer even importing certain types of crude oil, that is that light sweet crude oil from the likes of, say, Nigeria and Angola and Algeria. And in fact, with what we've seen here on the East Coast is a lot of infrastructure play out that the refineries here, say, in the Philadelphia market area, are now getting a large sum of their oil from the mid-continent of the United States. It's being trained over here and then barged and getting here quite literally by planes, trains, and automobiles. So we are now getting more barrels from the mid-continent than we ever had in the past, and that will only continue. So you have to figure every barrel we get from, say, North Dakota or Alberta is one less barrel we have to import from, say, Saudi Arabia or Nigeria. So from a pricing standpoint, from a volatility standpoint, the supplies coming out of North America, of course, are much more secure than that coming out of some of these other countries. So we are in for kind of a sweet spot over the next year, next 2 years, as we begin to really exploit our own sources of crude oil.
Stephen, why is there still a glut at Cushing?
It's all an inventory play right now, it's all an infrastructure play. We have the oil there, we just do not have enough pipelines, enough trains, enough whatever to get the oil there. So we have the oil there, now the play, and the play has been there for the past 2 years, and it will continue now for the next 2 years, is how do we get that oil from where it is to where it needs to be? And of course it needs to be in the East Coast to the refineries in New Jersey and in Philadelphia. It needs to be in the Gulf Coast, of course, the Houston refinery area, and also in the West Coast. So what we're seeing now is the market is trying to define itself. We do not have enough pipeline capacity to get that oil out. But the problem is pipelines cost a lot of money and take a lot of time to build. So we don't ultimately know where the ultimate source of demand for this mid-continent oil is going to really end up. This is why the trains are such a great option right now, because they give you that flexibility, that optionality to move the oil to where the demand is strongest at the moment. The market is still figuring out, ultimately, is it going to be West Coast refineries? Is it going to be the Gulf Coast refineries? Is it going to be the East? We do not know yet. And so, therefore, the trains are really the only viable option to debottleneck that oil. But as we've seen, the trains are not enough. We ultimately have to find out, and we are in the process of finding out, where that demand is. Once you get that ultimate demand epicenter, you will get the pipelines, and then you will have an avenue to debottleneck that oil.
But we're the XL pipeline, Stephen, would help as well, right, if that project had been passed and started?
Yes. I don't think I'm going out on a limb to say that. It was grounded purely on political grounds 2 years ago.
Well, is there any hope for it to be restarted this year?
Yes, because it has to be built. I think that the White House is in a much more comfortable position. They're not worried about another election.
There was talk, in fact, that it would be used as a bargaining chip in these negotiations.
Perhaps. It certainly is, but it's a deal that has that oil is there. We're not just talking about oil in North Dakota, but we're talking about a lot of oil in Canada. We're talking about oil, guys, in North America, that there's potentially enough oil there to offset the oil sitting right now on the Arabian Peninsula. We are the second Saudi Arabia of oil, and we are doing a maximum of minimum to exploit that source of oil right now. Something like the XL pipeline, other pipeline projects that have been proposed but have been shot down because, quite frankly, the economics aren't there, they all are on the table. So,
well, Stephen, is this the primary driver of prices here, WTI prices now? Or, you know, what about economic fundamentals? Does that play in at all anymore?
Well, it plays on a global scale, but we have to keep in mind that there are two different oil markets in the world. There's the North American oil market with all this oil, record amounts of oil sitting up in the upper Midwest and Canada. That oil cannot get to market. So that oil is artificially, the price of that oil is artificially depressed. So it's more of supply outstripping anything else.
Well, just very quickly, Stephen, because we have to go, but do you see oil staying above $90 for the first quarter?
For the first quarter, yes. But then once we get out of turnarounds in the second quarter, we'll probably dip back down into the mid-80s.
Stephen Chork of The Chork Report, thank you so much.
You can listen to The Hayes Advantage weekdays at 12:30 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.